It's time now for a special edition of Encounter with your host, Eben Fowler.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today on this special edition of Encounter. In the land of coronavirus and all the things that that does and the things that it changes. And we're going to be talking about that in relation to the main topic of our conversation today, which is how can you help your children, your grandchildren, and yourself deal with these crazy screens that we carry around with us all the time now, the smartphones, tablets, iPads, whatever particular type of device you happen to own. I'm going to be talking with Tracy Foster. Tracy is the executive director and one of the co-founders of an organization called START, which stands for Stand Together and Rethink Technology. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And, you know, I think you're going to really find this to be a practical conversation, a practical broadcast. And it's one that you're going to want to share with your friends, maybe with your kids, maybe with your grandchildren, because we're going to have some practical resources and ways of dealing with some of the difficulties that we have with these devices that stay in our pocket or purse or wherever you keep it. And there's a way to do that. I want to tell you right now, you can share that. You can go to botradionetwork.com. Click on the broadcasts tab, go down, there's a little search bar, just type Encounter in there, and then it will bring up all of our archive programs for Encounter. By the way, you can do this with any of the broadcast ministries we carry on the air on Bot Radio Network. And then you can share that with a friend or an enemy, whoever you want to, you can share it and share this really practical information. So you heard Tracy there kind of laughing at my semi-joke. Tracy, I'm glad to have you along.
Thank you, Eben. I'm so delighted to talk with you today.
And I just want to assure our listeners that you're not sitting in the studio. We're using technology, some technology we have here at the studio. You're talking on an iPhone, and we're connecting into a device here at Bot Radio Network. So it almost sounds like you're in the studio, but we're practicing a proper social and physical distancing here, aren't we?
We are, and I think it underscores part of what we'll get to talk about today, which is the fact that technology is a wonderful, beautiful thing and providing such a lifeline for us right now. So this conversation, I hope everyone hears, is not in any way anti-screen, anti-tech, but really just about how we can use it in ways to maximize the benefits, like what you and I are doing right now, and even how we're transmitting to the listeners, but minimizing some of the side effects that we've been seeing.
And there are a lot of side effects. So first of all, explain how you got involved in this thing, why you decided to co-found an organization. You probably had plenty of things to do. You've got a couple of children of your own, and you weren't looking probably for anything to do. But there was something that concerned you enough that now you've jumped headlong into this, and you're involved with an organization that's kind of spreading across the country.
Yes. Well, one way that I think about that is, I don't know, have you ever read or are you familiar with the book, Eben, What to Expect When You're Expecting?
No.
Okay. It's a book that is a cultural icon. Something like 90% of expecting moms read this before they have a baby. And
well, that would explain why I haven't read it.
That's right. But I bet some of your kids or in-laws or your wife has maybe even purchased it for people at times. But what we do sometimes in some of our sessions is, as we're sitting around the table, which obviously we're not doing today, we say, okay, how many of you have read this book? And basically everyone in the room, if it's, you know, a mom's group, even when there are dads of, you know, probably the young children age now, the age that would have young children now, almost every hand in the room goes up. And we say, why was it that you read this book? And people say things like, you know, I just didn't know what to do. I was excited about having a baby, but I also felt scared. It was kind of a new territory. And then I share, that's exactly why I read this book. I was so grateful for the incredible privilege and honor of being able to have a baby, but it was new territory. And this is another cultural icon of my generation, but it made me feel like Jessie Spano from this show that I watched growing up called Saved by the Bell, where she had this iconic scene about being so excited, but also so scared. And so things like reading a book called What to Expect When You're Expecting was really helpful. And there were a couple other things preparing to have a baby. I talked to my parents, my aunts, my uncles about what it was like. And I also leaned on my friends who are a little further along the way and could say, okay, here's what it's like when you do this and all of those different things. And so we joke that sometimes START was formed because there's not a next book in the series. There's a book that's needed that we would call What to Expect When You're Tech-specting. So instead of expecting, tech-specting, which is the fact that we are now in a new territory again with our kids. We're the first generation of parents who are raising kids that would rather text than talk. And it's uncharted territory. And as parents, we're looking for a roadmap. So that's where START came in, as a friend and I, as we are having kids, between us, we have kids ranging from age 5 at the youngest to 13 at the oldest. But as we were looking at how to navigate this, we were saying, man, we want to try to put together some type of a roadmap. We're thinking about questions like, when should I give my kid a phone? How much screen time is too much? You know, how should I feel about certain violent video games? All of those questions. And we wanted to try to figure out how to answer them. And so just like those three approaches that I mentioned earlier, going to books, the book doesn't exist. Talking to our parents to try to get their advice. They can give fantastic advice, but they have no lived experience. They can't say, oh, here's how we handled social media, because it wasn't around. And what was most striking is that when we went to those friends who were just ahead of us in the journey, they didn't have clear answers either. And these were the same friends that had helped coach us through potty training or friend drama or juggling the intensity of youth sports. And when we went to them and said, hey, I'm wondering how to handle this thing related to screens, or when should I get my kid a phone, or how should I handle that? What was so striking is that their voice would kind of respond in a somber tone and their face would turn a bit pale with a deer in the headlights look. And they'd say, you know what? I don't know, but do something different because it's not working. And we started to hear some unbelievably tragic side effects, completely unintended, that technology was having on our kids. And we started to hear so many people even sharing with us, I've never told anyone this, but here's something that's happening in our family.
There is definitely, there's a dark side to technology, and especially the way it's impacting young people. And as I said at the beginning of the program, we're not just going to talk about your children or your grandchildren. We're going to be talking about you, because anybody who carries one of these phones around is fighting these things. So tell us some of the negative consequences, particularly as it pertains to young people, if you would.
Yeah, well, a few that I'll mention. One is just that while there are no definitive studies, it is very commonly believed by mental health professionals that screen use, and there we can talk about what use means. It's not just time. It's not just the how much. It's also the what. What are you doing with your screens? But that screen use is very often tied to anxiety, depression, and even suicide. So there's a lot of bullying that goes on over devices. There's a new phrase. I'm going to excuse my language. I won't actually say anything crude, but if you think back to maybe when some of us were growing up or in high school, you might have been heard people talk about or reference like, you know, go F yourself. And there's a phrase now that when people are angry at someone else, they will say GKYS. They say it in a few different letters. What it means is go kill yourself. And that is disturbing. And it's thrown around. It'll be in a situation where, let's say, one girl didn't make the drill team. And in the past, she'd call her friend and sit up for hours processing that, going through the 5 stages of grief, really working it out and wringing it out like a towel in her soul, or talking to a parent or whoever it is. And now it's just happening over text message on these group chats, where when people don't actually see each other, it's not even just seeing, but talking, if they're not live with someone in some way, they say things that they would never say to someone in person. So we hear stories about, you know, let's take that drill team story. A kiddo who tries out for drill team or band or basketball team or whatever it is, starts to process that grief over text message, usually in a group chat. And at some point, some kid will be like, well, you know what? Actually, you were terrible. You shouldn't have made it. If I were you, I would go kill it. You know, I would GKYS. And these are things that they're not easy to just have like a duck, you know, where the water just rolls off your feathers. They really sit with people. So there are things around bullying, exclusion. One of the things that we hear about so often is that people's lives are just on display. And so you can see, using geolocating or through posts that people make. Oh, wow, I wasn't invited to that. Oh, wow, that person's life looks so perfect. And we've always compared. I love this phrase where we tend to compare our insides to other people's outsides.
Yeah.
But now we just have so much more exposure and comparison. And then another thing that I'll say that's so some of those things that I just mentioned are a lot of the key drivers to the anxiety and depression. Also, the fact that I'll say one more thing before I move on to another point, but that a lot of times when there is something hard, and I see this myself as a parent, let's say I've had a really challenging time with one of my kiddos, working through something that's hopefully leading to growth, but it's exhausting. And I step away for a moment. And what I really should do during that time is help process it, help pray about it, help think about what's the next step that I'm going to take when I walk back into that room. But instead, it can be so easy to just numb ourselves and pull out our phone and say, okay, I'm going to stress scroll. I'm just going to scroll away. And by the time I'm scroll for enough time, I'm numb. And that numbing ourselves actually prevents us, especially our adolescents, from learning the true coping skills to press into and work through hard things.
Isn't there kind of an addictive component to this as well? I mean, it does. In the studying that you've done, how does screen addiction compare to other types of addictions?
Oh, well, we try hard to not be too dramatic about this. But I mean, we've worked with quite a few neurotherapists, physicians, and other researchers who say that it is absolutely just as addictive. We work with a group called the Center for Humane Technology, which is based in Silicon Valley, and it is made up of former tech executives. It was founded by the former ethicist at Google, who basically left because he was concerned about some of how Google was not being as ethical as he wanted in terms of ways that they were luring in people. And it represents people from so many of the big social media firms. And so we have heard firsthand about the analysis that goes in. They know us better than we know ourselves. So we heard from someone, one of our friends, who used to manage the Facebook news feed. And they actually had data that would show how long, the way that he described it was basically how many posts you would typically go through. So let's say Evan, they would say, okay, he usually scrolls through 20 posts and then he's off. Well, guess what? They also know which content you're most interested in. So they might now say, okay, he usually scrolls 20 things and then he's off. So what we're going to do is at post number 18, we're going to put a picture of his grandkids. We're going to stagger out the most interesting content. So that's just enough of a hit to keep him going. Or another example is the autoplay functions on so many of our different things. I think it was started on YouTube.
Right.
But basically, you know, okay, hey, we've watched one thing. Uh-oh, we're about to lose those eyeballs. So let's autoplay something else. And the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, just a year or two ago was interviewed. And someone said, you know, hey, wow, you know, at this point, you guys are just dominating the market. Who do you even see as your competitor? And he, in a pretty confident way, said, sleep. And then he laughed and he said, and we're winning. We are literally competing against people sleeping. And to hear that tech executives are saying, we're going to try to keep that person up binge watching a show rather than letting them get sleep, which is so critical for their wellness. I think that's a sign of the fact that not only is it naturally addictive, but that in many cases, you know, they're playing into that addictiveness because it helps their numbers.
Wow. So you all have done an awful lot of research. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the practical things that you're doing now that you've taken. Now it sounds like it's really become a passion for you and for the other folks that are involved. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're doing to get this information out, to get families, parents, grandparents trained, I guess is maybe the word, in how to get some control of this stuff?
Yeah, so we have focused on three areas. We call them training, tools, and tips. So you already nailed at least one of those words in your description. And they serve different audiences in different ways. So to date, we've been based in Kansas City, building out a training model where we bring together different communities to go through an expert-developed curriculum with a neutral facilitator who can help kind of carry some of the feelings and complexities in the room. Our passion with our training program is that we feel like what we're really working on, our ultimate dream is to change cultural norms, to help people think about a concept of digital health and to use technology for themselves and for their kids in ways that are healthy and helpful. And so this is an interesting topic. I know I mentioned Dave Ramsey earlier. in many cases, in a Dave Ramsey class, if you have someone else who's sitting next to you and they're not abiding to their budget, you aren't immediately affected by that. It's a pretty individual and personal process and context. But what's interesting with technology, especially when we look at our youth, is it is much more of a systems approach, because it's really hard to do this. It's hard to do it at all because it's so addictive and so overpowering, but it's really hard to do it alone. So what we do is we bring these people into the room and we facilitate this conversation. And it's so fascinating because, you know, in general, when you look at national surveys, parents share that technology or screens is the number one battleground in their home between them and their kids. And they come in really feeling like they're fighting against their kids, and maybe even that they're fighting with some of the other people in the room who have, that person made a decision to get their third grader a phone, and now my third grader wants a phone. All of these interesting complexities. And when we go into these conversations, what's amazing is we actually start to hear that we have more in common than we thought. And so we'll hear situations where one third grade parent will say, well, I only bought my kid a phone because everyone else did. And then all of a sudden these five hands go up and say, well, wait, my kid told me your kid was getting a phone. That's the only reason why I did it. And so what's just really powerful is I think there's a lot of vulnerability that helps take away the shame from the conversation. And what's fascinating is by the time that people leave these training conversations, it's like those battle lines have been redrawn. So they're not fighting against others or fighting against their kids, but to the point of our name, they're actually standing together and fighting for their kids. And we help them come up with really practical things like thinking about their core values and how they can use technology to support that, how they can prevent technology from standing in the way of their core values, and then a lot of different really practical things that they leave from. But that's our training program. And we're now working to make it something that, Lord willing, whenever some of the stay-at-home orders are lifted, that we can do in community again. But we've actually built a scalable model so that we can do that across the country, not just in Kansas City. Our second area is tools. So we create, we have a set of kind of what are our top five tips and how would you live into that. We have parent guides for TikTok, a parent guide for Snapchat, some other deeper downloadable resources that parents can use individually to help them feel competent and confident to be able to kind of walk into some of these spaces. And then our third area is our tips. So we share things through our blog and on our social media channels. And it is just unbelievable. I just want to encourage anyone who's listening here. This is, if this is something that you feel the groaning pains in your family, you are not alone. There are more than 4 million people from every country in the world, except for North Korea, who have come to our blog looking for parenting tips in the digital age. So this is something that it is just a cultural landscape shift, and we're all in it together. So our social media, these tips, we really try to provide bite-sized things of, hey, what's something that you might be able to do this week, or a different tip about this that helps to take what feels overwhelming to a little bit more of a simple next step. And that's part of what we love about our name, too. Yeah, just take a start. You don't have to be perfect.
And I want to jump in here in a moment and ask you to go through some of the five top tips. We talked about it before we went on the air. But I also want to make sure that we let folks know what your website is, because, you know, there are going to be a lot of people listening who may not be able to get involved in one of these classes, a virtual class. And you talked about scaling it up across the country in different ways. But you've got resources available on your website that people can get started with without doing any of that stuff. WeStartNow.org, WeStartNow.org, and there are things that you can, well, for instance, right on the front page, there's a download our quarantine plus screens guide. Quite relevant for what's going on. In fact, I read through that earlier today, and it's very, very practical, very helpful and thoughtful tips. So again, it's WeStartNow.org. Front page download our quarantine plus screens guide. And there's also a family screen plan that's available there. Well, let's shift to, you know, we're just blowing through the time here and we won't get it all finished. But just take us through those five top tips. And then I've got a question. If it's not covered in one of the tips, I need to ask you a question that I think is on every parent's mind.
I'll pause after the first one, Evan. You can let me know if I should go faster. The first one, so these five tips, they align with the letters of our name, S-T-A-R-T, to try to help make them easier to remember. Our first one is start with yourself, which is actually about modeling healthy digital health for your kids. So even before quarantine, we're imagining things have gone up quite a bit, but it's shown that we check our phone more than 80 times a day. And our kids are learning digital habits from us first. And so if we can try to be intentional about thinking about how often we're on our phones, how we communicate about it, all of those different things, it has a really powerful impact. Quarantine is a different day and age. So this is an anecdote from before quarantine, but we have had the privilege of working in partnership with it's becoming statewide, but right now countywide, mental health organization for kids. It's called Zero Reasons Why, and it's to prevent teen suicide. And they have these sessions where kids share so many of the side effects and the problems to alert parents about what the mental health epidemic is like for teens. And at the end, every single time, a parent will raise their hand and say, I am so overwhelmed. What is one thing that I can do to try to help? And one of the teen council members will every single time say, put down your phone and talk to us.
Yeah.
So there is a lot that we can do as parents. That's the first tip. Our second one for tea is tables and bedtimes. So as much as we're going to be on screens a lot, we really encourage defining some specific times and places to recharge and reconnect as a family without devices. And if you're looking for a place to start, we love suggesting tables, putting the phones away during meals. It's amazing how many positive effects there are from having a meal together as a family. And now during quarantine, we don't have sports practices or business travel. So we have the opportunity or sometimes the challenge of having them many, many more times. That impact of relational confidence and self-esteem and all the positives that come, it doesn't require an organic gourmet meal. All it requires is attention, and devices distract from our attention. So we'd encourage you to put devices away at tables. And then the other one is at bedtimes. 80% of our kids who have phones are using their phones when they're supposed to be sleeping. And sleep is the number one component to mental and physical health. And so we would just say, please get, just like your phones need to charge overnight, so do your kids. Get those phones out of your kids' bedrooms. Even if they're up doing something really good, like learning Chinese, then they need the sleep. But even more, our impulse control is lower at night. So a lot of the worst things that we see happening are happening at night.
Right. So that's ST. Have we gotten to the A yet in START?
Yep. A is next, which is accountability. And this is focused on encouraging every family to put in some type of internet filter as a safety net to protect your kids from either accidentally stumbling onto unsavory content or going there proactively. I didn't mention this earlier when we were talking about the side effects because there are so many, but one thing I do want to share is that right now, the average age of exposure to online pornography is age 10, with nearly 90% of scenes portraying a man being violent to a woman. Hmm. And those views, if we want to talk addictive, there's lots of science around just how addictive it is once you start to see that. And we are seeing some unbelievably tragic effects in communities across the country and really the world, where when kids start to see this, it can become addictive. It has a lot of personal effects on them. I can share that at some point. I know we don't have time, but also our kiddos are acting it out. So we're seeing a surge of youth sexual assault cases in children's hospitals across the country. And the primary growth is from perpetrators aged 11 to 15. So these are kids who are seeing violent pornography. And in many cases, in almost all of the cases, the pornography is what is inspiring them to act out sexually on their siblings, on their cousins, or other children. So there are a lot of resources on our website, but BARC, Circle, RPACT, Covenant Eyes, there are so many different providers. You don't need to try to find the perfect one, but just at least get started with something to try to make it so that this access is not there. It will almost always have happened accidentally. I have a house of boys. My kids love searching for sporting goods. Well, guess what? Our local store is called Dick's Sporting Goods, but they don't usually type out all those letters into the search bar. And so it's little accidents like that that can quickly cause kids to go down a road that they never asked for that could have very serious effects.
Yeah, and that just points out how important this is. So let's do R and T rather quickly, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay, great. Our R, we have a special one for quarantine, but in general is ride, practice, drive. And that is to think about teaching your kids how to use screens the same way that you teach them almost anything else, including learning to drive. You don't hand your kid the key to a car at age 16 and just say, happy birthday, go out, have fun, be home at 9, stay safe. No, you go through an intentional training process where they get increasing responsibility as they demonstrate competence. Right now, most kids at age 9 or 10 get an iPhone fully unloaded. They have the whole world. It's like giving them the keys. And so we encourage, and we have more resources about this on our website, but that you do a lot to help give your kids increasing responsibility, increasing access with their devices, that you go through a device introduction where maybe at first you give them a Wi-Fi enabled walkie-talkie, then they move to a smartwatch, then they move to what we call a dumb phone, and then ultimately they move to a smartphone. But to just know that you have a range, a spectrum of products where they can learn and grow and develop different skills on their own. So ride, practice, drive.
And tea.
And tea. Our final T is time well spent, which is just encouraging families to think about that we are not just calling our kids away from something, but we're calling them into something that we believe is even more beautiful. We want them to be captivated by life, not just screens. And so the more that you can do as a family to come together and say, what does it really mean to be a Foster or a Bowen or whatever your last name is? What is it that our family loves? Is it adventure? Is it this? And how can we be using our offline time and our online time to be exploring some of those things or to be exploring connection? So we have lots of recommendations, especially in this guide that you mentioned about if you're feeling quarantined or quarantine and screens plan, about thinking about offline activities and the value of that and thinking about online activities as well, because we increasingly have the responsibility as parents to engage in our kids' online interests because that is a real part of their life. So I will encourage one tip during this quarantine. If your kid has a favorite app or game or show that they love, that you have never like sat down and picked up and played Fortnite or Minecraft or whatever it is, this is an opportunity. Step in, learn more about what it is that they're passionate about. And that you will really, we imagine that you will really feel like that is time well spent.
That was a bonus tip. So, Tracy, we are out of time. I want to remind our listeners they can go to westwestartnow.org. And get more information, get more involved, and find out more about what you're doing with STAR. So, Tracy, thanks for putting this together, for forming this organization, and for the work you're doing. May God bless that work.
Thank you so much.
For Bot Radio Network, this is Eben Fowler. Thanks for listening.